Hello and welcome to Car Talk on National Public Radio with us, Click and Clack, the Tappet Brothers. We're broadcasting this week from the offices of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe here at Car Talk Plaza, where we have been sequestered.
Yes.
Planning the Dewey, Cheatham & Howe company picnic.
What an event.
Now, on today's show, we're going to tell everything about the picnic and how you.
Me?
No. You, the listener, can win a trip to our fair city to attend the Dewey, Cheatham & Howe company picnic.
That'll be easy.
So stay close to
you. We only got two people listening. One of them's going to win. So you got a 50-50 chance.
So stay close to the radio and have a pencil at the ready.
Yeah.
Now, I know my brother is chomping at the bit to read some of this crummy mail that he has. So you might as well just get it over with.
Well, okay, I'll read this. This is an article from someplace, a newspaper, and it's not obvious what newspaper it is, except that the letter came from someone named Sarah, who lives in Oakland. Sarah Seeds. She said, I thought you guys would be interested in this. It's an article or a column by someone named John Carroll. Every year, I should write a Volvo driver's column. Just as a reminder that the situation has not improved and the lives of the rest of us are still in peril. In peril. There's a period there.
Mm-hmm.
Volvo drivers are still the worst. The rudest, the most arrogant, the most oblivious. This is not prejudice. This is daily observation. Wow, John. Ask people who ride bicycles about Volvo drivers. Ask them about the number of times they've wound up eating sidewalk because some baby on board Volvo has drifted right in heavy traffic. Volvo drivers are all surrounded by an impenetrable cone of smugness. Wow, this is serious business.
Sounds angry.
I've got safety features and you don't, is the basic Volvo attitude. Wow, wait till my wife hears this.
Get to the good part. Where's the good part?
That was it. I mean, that's basically...
I blinked.
That's basically it. I mean, I just thought I would bring that up because on occasion, several people have made this observation. I have to say, I have never experienced the fact that Volvo drivers are the worst.
Well, you have a rather limited field, I would say.
I do have a limited field. However, I did just the other day sort of bump into somebody in a Chrysler New Yorker, short old man with a hat.
Dead.
And AAA stickers on the back.
It was Dad, I think.
You're doing 12 miles an hour.
That was definitely
on
Dad.
On the sidewalk.
If you want to call us, the number is 1-800-332-9287. Please call and my brother will read another letter. Hello, yeah. You're on Car Talk.
This is Eric from Georgia.
Hi, Eric.
And I have a little problem. Actually, I have a 1970 Opel Kadett.
Oh, gee.
My
do you really?
God. Really?
Yes.
Boy, there was a time. Must have been around 1970.
Yeah.
When we had Opel Kadets galore.
The garage was full of them. On a daily basis.
And aren't they so cute.
And I used to like...
All replacing water pumps.
I used to like working on Opel Kadets until I had an opportunity to work on some real cars. But nevertheless, go ahead. I'm all ears.
Well, see, I'm not mechanical. I can take things apart really well. But I can't put them back together too good.
Well, you're half mechanical then.
Well, I mean, it could be worse.
Some people can't even take them apart.
My problem is, though, that my car died at AAA.
Oh.
And I had to have it towed, which was not funny. And what happens is, you can start it and it'll run for about 2 minutes at idle. Okay? No problem. But when you go to put it in gear, it dies. It goes, pew, pew, pew. And then just dies. It's the most embarrassing thing. It does it on the streets, on freeways, in the driveway.
So, I mean, it doesn't go at all now.
I can get it maybe two blocks.
You can?
Maybe two blocks. I've replaced the condenser.
Wait, in those two blocks, is it sputtering all the time?
Oh, smooth as silk, and it idles beautifully.
Ah, okay. And at the end of two blocks, pump, 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 done.
Done. I couldn't make it to the end of the street.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now.
You said you replaced the condenser.
I replaced my condenser, and that didn't help.
Yeah.
I replaced my spark plugs. That didn't help. I replaced my spark plug wires.
I think you're in the wrong medium.
No, you're homing in on it.
You think so?
Okay, wait, I replaced my points.
Good.
Yeah.
I didn't replace my coil, but it didn't feel like really hot or anything.
Okay. It could be the coil, certainly. I mean, you can test it.
Okay. How
but
do
not
I
the coil.
Well, I don't know what the spec is, but you have to look in your shop manual and find
out.
Yeah,
no, the way you test it is you buy a new one.
Right. You buy a new one, but you can find out how many ohms it's supposed to have.
You think he's in the right medium?
Yeah, and I'll tell you why.
Why?
I remember from my vast experience with these,
the
first thing that you replaced should have solved the problem, the condenser.
That's what everybody else thought.
And I'll tell you the reason it didn't. You have a bad ground between the condenser and the body of the distributor. That condenser is grounded through the distributor body.
Right.
Okay, it bolts to the side of the distributor, does it not?
Huh.
And you have a bad ground. Take that puppy off of there and clean it all off with sandpaper.
Oh, no. Don't ask me to do that. There's a little screw that holds it in.
How many did you lose?
5 times.
Well, you need to go out and buy a little screw starter. Go to Sears Roebuck. Is there a Sears Roebuck in Georgia?
He'd go, but his car doesn't run.
Well, take a cab and buy that little screw starter. You will love it. It will change your life. In fact, what you want
is the thing that holds the screw so that you won't drop it. And it's very long and skinny and allows you to, actually, they have short ones too.
Yeah, the short ones.
And it allows
even better.
You to screw that thing in enough to get it started, and then you can drive it home with a real screwdriver instead of trying to get your fat fingers in there.
So it'll be very easy to do.
Okay, so I need to clean that.
You need to clean that because you're getting a bad ground, and as a result of that bad ground, you're getting a weak spark. If that doesn't fix it, buy a new coil.
Well, before you do all of that,
uh-huh,
I would check to find out if you, in fact, really are getting a weak spark. You can do that.
By pulling the spark plug wire?
Sure, the spark plug wire.
And you put your tongue on the wire.
You put your tongue on the wire, and you have someone crank the engine.
On the block, right?
If you don't really notice it, then you are getting a weak spark.
Okay.
If you wake up the next day, then you were getting a pretty good spark.
Right, if you regained consciousness within 5 minutes, then the spark was weak. But seriously... Yeah. You're not going to be able to quantify the spark because you don't know what a good spark looks like.
Well, you can check it on someone else's car.
He needs to ground the condenser.
I believe it.
In fact, if you want to corroborate this, without even taking the condenser off, run a jumper wire with an alligator clip from the housing of the distributor, better still, right on the condenser.
Stick it right on that screw.
Right to the negative terminal of the battery.
And you'll run forever.
Run like a dream.
And then just leave the wire there.
That's it. Solder it right in.
Don't go to Sears Roebuck. Go to Radio Shack.
I'll try that. Thank you very much.
Good luck,
Eric.
Thank
Opel
you.
Cadet.
Bye-bye.
An Opel Cadet with a K.
Yes,
that's
indeed.
But was Eric with a K? I didn't ask him if it was Eric with a C or a K.
I'm sure it was a C.
Get him back.
1-800-332-9287. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Annie in Portsmouth, New Hampshire.
No
Hi,
kidding.
Annie.
Gee, I drove through Portsmouth, New Hampshire just days ago.
Did you? That was you, was it?
What an ex...
With the state police on his tail.
That was me, because that was the only car that's been through in the last month. What an exciting town that is, huh?
Isn't it, though?
Yeah.
Oh, well.
So what's up, Annie?
Oh, well, I'm calling to see if you guys can give me some insight into my husband and his cars.
Hmm.
Well, we'll try. Being husbands and car owners ourselves, we may have a leg up on you.
But husbands are sometimes difficult to fathom, as we say.
Well, I thought being male, you might be able to help me with this.
All right.
My husband seems to be sort of obsessive compulsive about vehicles.
Well, you're talking to the wrong guys.
Well, that's me. I mean, I'm like that.
Well,
this is Tom Turtle Wax Magliozzi you're talking to. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Right. What's his name anyway, Annie?
Here's the deal. He's 35 years old.
What's his name?
Huh?
What's his name?
Kevin.
Kevin. I have to get the right picture. 35 years old.
Yes, and he's owned like 16 cars.
No kidding.
In that period of time. And at the moment, he owns 3 cars, a motorcycle, and is considering buying 2 more.
Does he have white shoes and the white belt? Maybe he wants to be a dealer.
Right,
he may be a latent car salesman.
Yeah, I know. Or maybe he should have been a mechanic or
no
something.
No kidding. What cars does he own? What are the 3 cars he currently owns?
Well, right now he owns a 84 Diesel Rabbit, a 72 Ford truck, a 56 Chevy truck, and a BMW motorcycle.
Oh.
And he's thinking about buying a Volkswagen Bug and a Jetta.
Well, you know, if it weren't for the 56 Chevy truck,
we'd say the net value of his cars, including the two he's planning to buy, is about $87.
Yeah, I mean, I was beginning to think that his taste was really quite bad in vehicles. except for the 56 Chevy truck, which is the only one that has any inherent value.
Yeah, it's a beauty.
So what's your question, Annie?
Well, the question is, I think it's like some kind of illness. He's constantly changing vehicles, always buying and selling. He's never happy with his cars.
Well, so, think about it this way. You have to put everything in perspective and count your blessings, don't you? I mean, he could be doing this with wives instead of cars.
That's true. That is true. And maybe he's...
I mean, these are like mistresses, these vehicles,
yeah, but you have
aren't
to,
they?
If people have a strange behavior in one area of their lives, it may only be that they're hiding that same kind of behavior.
Oh, quite the contrary. No, I think this nullifies.
This is an outlet, you mean?
Yes, absolutely. It has an effect that
a therapeutic
him,
effect
that
on
prevents him from being the real weirdo that he is. Yeah, I mean, he might be some kind of a deviant.
And so
we know he's a deviant. He might be a different kind of deviant.
And so he's just reliving all of this by changing cars every couple of years, and we should just let him do it.
Oh, I would encourage it.
You would encourage
it. In fact, Annie, I think you should participate with him and help him find more cars, and maybe you might get interested in it too. You can be a couple of weirdos together. But I wouldn't try to thwart this. I think this is very healthy. Well, men need these kinds of things.
Men do need vehicles. I mean,
see, women don't understand this.
No.
And it's not just vehicles.
Yes, but to change every couple of months?
It can be. I mean, there are some people who just aren't satisfied with what they have, and they have to just keep looking. I would take up meditation if I were here.
On the other hand, this may be some kind of a subconscious... This may be some kind of a message that maybe he's not satisfied with everything in his life.
Yeah. Oh, no.
You may be next.
Yeah, I mean, you can't find happiness if you just keep scratching around looking for something new.
I mean, wouldn't you be bummed out, Annie, if he traded you in for Fafnugen? Well, I would count my blessings if I were you, and I would really encourage him to do this as much as he wants. It's very healthy, and it's good for him.
Okay.
But don't worry about it. He's perfectly normal. Well, as normal as guys get.
Yeah, he's not normal.
Right. See you, Annie.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Bye.
Guess what? The Puzzler Answer and more calls are coming up right after this. Okay, now last week I saw you write the Puzzler in the palm of your hand.
I did.
So I know you remember. What is it?
It says on
you
my...
You wash time.
No, it says right here, meet you in the hall. What does that mean?
No, the Puzzler is the famous Monty Hall Puzzler.
This, I have to say...
I mean, this is the paradigm of puzzles, is it not?
Well, it's certainly up there with the poison glasses. It is, isn't it? I mean, if you had to think of the two greatest puzzles that you know, the poison glasses would be one, and Monty Hall would be next.
Right up there with the Gordian knot.
Oh!
Right?
Huh?
And you're dying to hear the answer, I'm sure.
But
you're not going to get it because due to unprecedented interest in this puzzler, we have no choice but to extend the deadline for another week. I mean,
we are receiving answers, right and wrong, to this puzzler by the truckload every day.
A plethora of responses.
And lots of them besides. And so because of that, we've got to give more people a chance to respond. So you're going to repeat the puzzler?
No, right now. We're going to repeat it during the second half of the show. So if you haven't heard it or you want to hear it again, because it is really a splendid, and maybe you think you know the answer, but you'd like to just check it out.
You want to check a few. Sometimes you hear it and you're not sure of some little point.
You may have missed a detail. You may say, they're trying to pull a fast one on me. So be sure to stay tuned, because we're going to repeat the whole puzzler during the second half of the show. And by the way, we're also going to tell you how you can win a almost all expenses paid trip to our fair city to attend this year's Dewey Cheatham and Howe Company picnic.
Yeah.
If you want to call us, the number is 1-800-332-9287. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, is this the Tabit Brothers?
Yes.
All right, you're not related to the Lifter Sisters, are you?
All right, wise guy, who is this?
Yeah, this is Ken in Spokane, Washington.
Hi, Ken.
How are you?
Good. My question for you is about anti-lock brakes. I read in your meteoric book about how they work.
Yes.
And it seems to be true. I can't lock the brakes up on my car, even when I push pretty hard on it.
Yes, that's the whole idea.
Yeah, well, so my question is this. A few years ago, I took a defensive driving course that the State Patrol did.
And they taught you to pump the brakes.
Right. Well, Well, no, they, you know, I mean, yeah, that's exactly right. That was one of the things they said was to pump the brakes.
Yeah.
But also, they had a couple of things that I always do as often as I can remember, and that is, first of all, the two-second rule about following distance.
Right.
Which works great.
Uh-huh.
And the other was when you stop at a light behind another car or a line of cars, that you should stop far enough back of the car in front of you so that you can see the rear tires of the car on the ground. And they said that so if somebody hits you from behind, that...
You won't go smashing into the car in front of you.
Oh, that's great if you live in Montana. You couldn't possibly do that in any place where it's populated.
I mean, there'd be motorcycles and everything sneaking in front of you.
You know what the two-second rule is in Boston? Never follow anyone for more than 2 seconds. Pass them.
Go around them.
Go on
the sidewalk.
All right, so...
Okay, so we have all those rules, and they're all good ones.
Okay. Well, so if you stop far enough behind the car in front of you when you're at a light, and you keep your foot on the brake, supposedly that'll keep you from rolling into the guy in front if you get hit from behind.
Yes.
My question is, if you've got anti-lock brakes, will the anti-lock brakes, because of the way they work, will they cause your car to go forward if you're hit from behind? In other words, will they do their intermittent?
That's an excellent question, and the answer
we'll have the answer next week because we're going to go right out and try it.
Well, I think the answer is no, because anti-lock brakes don't work unless you're going above a certain miles per hour, like 5 miles per
hour. Right. So if you were to get accelerated up to and beyond 5 miles an hour.
But if you're stopped, that is less than 5 miles an hour.
So they don't work. They don't work below 5 miles an hour. You got to be moving.
That's correct. You have to be moving.
Find a real practical way to test that.
Well, I mean, the brakes work, but the anti-lock portion of the brakes don't work.
I gotcha.
So that was a good question, however.
Well, good. I'm glad you thought so.
But have you been able to refrain from pumping the brakes? In fact, when Chevrolet first came out with anti-lock brakes on their big cars, what do they call that thing? The Caprice. I think the California Highway Patrol was all upset because guys were crashing these things left and right because they didn't know how to use them.
Yeah, you can't drive a car that has anti-lock brakes the way you would drive a car that doesn't have anti-lock brakes.
Right, well, I never did that anyway.
Of course.
I never pumped the brake. I could never think of it fast enough, so I just slam on the brake and I couldn't steer.
That's good. You're all set then. Just smash your foot on that brake as hard as you can.
As a matter of fact, when General Motors sent people out to train these highway patrol people in California,
they had to do frontal lobotomies
on
some of them.
They sent all former New York retired New York cab drivers because they never pumped the brake.
Right.
They'd slam on that
pedal
and screech to every red light.
That's there are only two positions for the accelerator, full on and full off. And two positions for the brake, full on and full off.
That explains a lot of people I know.
Yeah.
Well,
we'll talk to the lift assisters about this, Ken.
Good.
Thanks for your call.
Thanks for calling.
All right. Well, thanks for the help.
All righty. All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
What help? 1-800.
We gave him an actual answer there.
332-9287. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, my name's Karen.
Hi, Karen. Is that Karen with a K?
That's correct. I'm from Greensboro, North Carolina.
Greensboro.
I listen to you guys all the time.
No,
I wish
kidding.
My kids did.
Don't you ever like cook dinner or go to a movie?
No, not very.
No, none of those are important
things. You have to put your priorities together.
That's true. That's good to hear.
So what's up, Karen?
Well, I hope you guys can help me. I've got a 1989 BMW 325i. I bought it brand new, but ever since I've had it, about every 2,000 to 3,000 miles, the front rotors warp. They've tried different things, different brake shoes. Of course, I've had 9 sets of rotors put on. I'm really at a loss here as to how to solve this problem.
Hmm. No kidding.
And the Bimmer dealer doesn't have any idea?
No, they have no idea. They said that this was an inherent problem with the 89s. I think that's just one of their lines they look up in a book, you know, and tell you.
I mean, inherent is a good...
Yeah, that's a mechanics word.
Yeah. Well, it's a BMW mechanics word.
Yeah, that's right.
It certainly is. That's right.
I mean, you wouldn't catch someone like crusty using the word inherent.
Yeah, if you just go to if you went to like a Chevy dealer, he'd say, they all do this, lady. You know, but at BMW, they say that's an inherent problem.
But I trust that all of these rotor replacements have been at their expense and not yours.
That is correct. But now it's getting to the point where they're...
getting tired of it, huh?
Yeah, they're kind of avoiding me. So I'm really getting tired of it and I'm going to try to get it fixed on my own.
Well, no, you shouldn't. No, you shouldn't. Legally, they cannot avoid you. Legally, they are bound to fix this until you die.
Oh, okay. Okay.
By law, they are.
Well, now, they did tell me that, but it's just getting real frustrating
well,
dealing with
them. Plus they're hoping to outlive you.
Oh, yeah, well, they may.
Well, if it works, if they last as long as an oil change, then that's fine. Change the oil and change the rotors every time you go in.
Yeah,
sure.
That's a good idea.
But I don't know what the problem is. I'm hardly an engineer of the kind that they have at BMW, but I would think that they would have been able to figure this out. I mean, after all, they figured it out for the 1990s.
Yeah, I mean, it can't be a problem inherent in the 89s, which is unfixable, because it seems to me the 90 is the same size. 89, did they make a change?
Yeah, that's why I feel that it's, that's just one of their pass the buck phrases there.
Sure, I mean, at some point they must have solved the problem, so whatever rotor they're using to solve the problem, that's the one that they should be putting in, but I'm
well,
sure
they
thought of
that.
Well,
they may not be able to do that. They may have changed the design of the hub, they may have made a larger wheel bearing. The rotor may be smaller in diameter. They could have changed any number of things. And to retrofit your car with all these new things, boy, I guess this is one car to stay away from if you're looking for a used car, huh?
Yeah. I feel sorry for whoever gets it.
Now, I guess maybe some people weren't listening. This is an 89 325i. So you see one of these babies in the paper for sale, it's worth about $8. I mean, what a... the thing is, if you buy one...
Then the warranty is gone.
The warranty is history. I mean, wouldn't that frost
you? So
you,
you have to keep this car.
Yeah, I'm kind of... Well, I left it outside with the keys in it one night, but the guy that stole it brought it back.
Brought it back. The pedal was pulsing too much. You leave your note?
That's what...
Hey, lady, your pedal pulses.
Yeah.
So in your case, I don't know what to do. I guess you have to just live with it.
Well, if you hear of anybody that wants one of these...
Not after this call. Yeah, you'll never sell it, Karen, thanks to us.
Well,
and
you. There you go. At least I've tried every option I have now.
Yeah,
well, make sure you drive them crazy. And I'm sure that not everyone that has this problem. You know what you should do? Get in touch with the local BMW club in your area.
Mm-hmm.
And find out there may be some hotshot out there who's a little more savvy than the engineers and has a creative solution to this problem.
Okay.
And I bet you'll find someone out there that solved it.
Well, I will try that.
And if you find an answer, let us know, because we obviously didn't have one.
Okay, well, I appreciate you trying.
Thanks for your call, Karen.
Thanks. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Be sure to stick around for more calls and the new puzzler coming right up. Hi, we're back. You're listening to Car Talk on National Public Radio with us, Click and Clack, the Tappet Brothers, and we're here to try to answer your questions about cars and car repair and death.
It isn't really death. I just wanted to read from, what is this, Time Magazine, a couple of obituaries that are interesting. And both of these people died at a very ripe old age, and they both are very, very famous for things. One is Alfred Butts, who died at the ripe old age of 93, inventor of Scrabble.
What's his name?
Alfred Butts.
Oh.
Not Buck Naked.
No. And he's not related to Seymour Buns, is he?
He's not related to... So he's one, and the other one, this is going to sadden you a little bit.
I'm sure. I can hardly wait.
In fact, what's going to sadden you more than anything is to find out how old he was. You know who died? Pinky Lee.
Yoo-hoo.
It's me. My name is Pinky. Remember
Yeah,
him?
You know, I'm always amazed to find out that people that I've known for since my youth
they should
are
get old.
10 years older than me. How old was he? 52?
85.
85. A mere
it
boy.
Is 10 years older than you.
Well, Pinky
well,
Lee certainly
were two
brought
great
much
people.
Joy and happiness to sure. my otherwise sad and dismal youth. I mean, he was quite a guy.
He was quite
and
a
I,
guy.
And to this day, I admire the inseam of Pinky Lee. I mean, he must have been 6'2 with a 24-inch inseam. Great trout. Anyway, it's time for the new puzzler, but it's not a new puzzler because it
no,
was what?
It's been recycled. What's the word?
Last week's puzzler.
We extended.
Extended.
It was extended.
Yes.
That's the
okay, I'm going to give you the details briefly, but for those of you that... All right, I'll give you the long
version.
You
don't know the definition of the word briefly.
I do.
You think it has to do with undershorts. All right, briefly.
I have to give the entire history.
You do. You have to. The famous...
With a small biographical sketch of Monty Hall and the lovely Carol Merrill.
All right, so give us a biographical
I don't know anything
sketch,
about them. Here, but everyone remembers the Monty Hall show where you got to pick door number one, door number two, or door
what
number three.
What was the show? Let's Make a Deal. No.
Yeah, the show is called Let's Make a Deal. Yeah, Let's Make a Deal. And people dressed up in peculiar outfits. Hey, most of them look like you, as a matter of fact.
What do you mean?
And Monty Hall
would, Kramer shirts.
would present them with three doors. And people would be asked to pick. One of the doors had a wonderful prize behind it. And the other two had...
Like a car.
A Hawaiian vacation or something.
Yeah.
And the other two had zonks, you know, like a 100 years supply of Eskimo pies or, you know, family-sized
like
preparation H. Right. Click-and-clack porcelain miniatures, anything like that. So when you picked a door, you obviously had a 1-in-3 chance of winning the great prize and a 2-in-3 chance of winning a zonk.
Correct.
Now, to make a long story short, I know it's too late for that, but
here's the
puzzle. Monty Hall says, pick a door, and you pick one. And then he says to you, I'm going to show you one of the two doors that you didn't pick. Okay, let's say you picked door number one. At this point, your chances of winning the great prize are 1-in-3. Everyone knows that.
I know that.
Okay, and if he said to you, would you like to switch right now without knowing anything else? You'd say, of course not, because picking door number two or door number three wouldn't change my chances any.
Right.
Right? I still have a 1-in-3 chance. But he says, I'm going to help you out. You pick door number one, and I'm going to show you what's behind... And he's going to pick one of the other two doors, and he's going to pick the one that's obviously the other zonk. They may both be zonks, in which case he could pick either one of them, but he knows where the prize is.
I should hope so.
Right, right. And if you slip him $20 during the show, he'd tell you where it was. But he shows you door number two, which is the Eskimo pies. And then he says, you have picked door number one. I've shown you what's behind door number two. It's a zonk.
Right. Would you like to switch
switch to door number three? What do you do? We want to know, do you switch or do you stay and why? Now, if you think you know the answer, or you have one of those Elvis stamps that you're dying to get rid of because it really looks kind of crummy, you can send your answer to us. Here, you ready? Get your pencil.
You could send it to anybody, but you could send it to us.
If you want to win, you could send it to us.
That's right.
Here's the address. Puzzler Tower, Car Talk Plaza, Box 3500, Harvard Square. That's H-A-H-V-A-H-D, space, S-Q-U-A-Y-A-H, Cambridge.
Our fair city.
Ma, 02238.
Zero, it's 02238. Zero. Always a letter, zero is a number, and you'd think that a guy with 6 degrees from MIT would know that.
I'm sorry.
Shape up.
It won't happen again. If you'd like to call us, the number is 1-800-332-9287. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
This is Marty from Honolulu.
You know, I knew you were calling from far away because
of the lull.
Yes.
There was that little lull, a little lull.
Okay, Marty, what's up? You still there?
I'm still here, yeah.
Okay, we're ready.
Okay, well, I have an 87 Toyota Tercel, and there's nothing really wrong with the way the car runs, but a few months ago, I went to the beach to go to a picnic, and I parked the car in
Marty. Tell us about a few...
Yeah, when was this? Like in January?
Yeah, sure. Tell us about riding to the beach on picnics.
We were 3 deep in Bronco Nagurskis, and you were going to the picnic? Probably buck naked, too.
See if we give you the right answer. All right, go ahead.
85 degrees.
Oh, sure. That's all right.
It's always 85 degrees in Honolulu.
Okay, rub it in. We can take
it. Paradise.
We can take it because we're real men.
Okay. All right, so you're on the way to the picnic.
So I'm parking my car, and I found a kind of funky parking lot to leave it at. And when I got back to the car after sunset, there were dozens and dozens of cockroaches climbing on the hood and the roof and the dashboard and all over the outside of the car.
Gross!
And we are talking Hawaiian cockroaches. These guys
are world-class roaches, huh? How long are they?
An inch or two.
An inch or two? Well, that's a standard-sized cockroach. I wouldn't call that your giant economy size. That's a New York roach.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've had roaches in apartments I've lived in that my dog was afraid of. I mean, those were roaches.
When you come up the stairs at night, your dog goes, that's exactly
what happened. I opened my door one night with my dog by my side.
And she ran.
She wouldn't go in. She stood there going, and I had a roach in there that almost was trying to steal the garbage pail. The whole thing.
Well,
that's
anyway, so these roaches are all over your car. Dozens of them.
Right, so you know what kind of roaches I'm talking about then. And since then, every evening after dark, these cockroaches come out. And they're never on the inside of the car. They're only on the outside.
Well, they haven't figured out how to get in yet.
You think these are the same roaches that come out every day?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, every evening. And it's only after dark.
Well, roaches are nocturnal.
Well, where are they during the day?
That's a good question. I've looked under the hood during the day, and I don't see anything.
Well, roaches are pretty good at hiding themselves.
I guess they are.
Yeah, they're pretty good at hiding themselves, and they're there. You need, what do they use? What do they use for roaches? You need the Roach Motel.
Oh, those guys just love that stuff. I've tried spraying them and leaving roach traps and all sorts of things, and they just don't seem to be fazed by it at all.
Really?
So I'm wondering what these cockroaches possibly could be attracted to. What are they living on in my car, and how can I get rid of
them? Well, they're not living on anything. That's why they come out at night, and they're living in your car. But they're not living on it.
Oh, man, Marty, this is enough to this is disgusting.
My skin is crawling now. I'm about to blow chunks, I think.
I'd sell it.
And sell it during the daytime.
Yeah.
I mean, the thought of dozens of cockroaches riding around with me every day, that's too much for me. I can't deal with it.
But you've got to strike while the iron is hot. I mean, you need the professionals. You need an exterminator.
I mean, the
stuff you're spraying around, you don't even know where to spray, perhaps.
Well,
if you could get them at some point.
You have to get them at night. You have to get them on the hood.
There's nothing for them to eat in your car. So they're obviously leaving the car at night to go someplace to dine.
Sure, Burger King.
You have to get them. You have to put a ring of fire, so to speak, around your car.
Oh, that's a good plan. So wait until they leave. After they've left, you put the ring around the car of what?
The deadly
poison.
The deadly poisons, whatever
poison,
they are. Chlordane.
Except what about dogs and cats in the neighborhood?
Yeah, so you lose a few.
Oh, no, you can't do that. I would take it. I would call an exterminator and tell them to just come and bomb it.
Really? I didn't know they did that to cars.
Well, they don't, but they will now.
Well, they do in Northern Ireland. I mean, I don't know.
You'll be the first customer.
Uh-huh.
Jeez.
And that wouldn't ruin my car?
Well, I mean, it doesn't ruin houses.
No, it won't ruin your car.
That's true.
Yeah, that nice DuPont smell for 6 or 8 months.
Yeah, I mean, I guess if they put a bomb under the hood and made sure that it was in a place where nobody would get hurt, that would drive them away from the car, and then you just drive away and they wouldn't find you again. They'd end up in your apartment.
Right.
That might be a little worse.
Okay. Well, if you guys want to come out to Hawaii and personally look into this problem,
we may have to.
I tell you, Marty, Honolulu has always been my dream, my paradise, and you have spoiled it for me. Just the thought of dozens of cockroaches climbing around on the hood of your car.
We won't be able to come out there, but Murky is putting his Hawaiian shirt on right now. He'll be out there in the morning.
Well, good luck. I hope you find these little guys.
Well, thanks.
Good
I'll
luck.
Do my best.
Bye-bye.
All righty. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, another hour of your precious youth has been squandered listening to Car Talk. Our producer is the estimable Doug Lavoisier, Sac Dugas Berman. Associate producer and dean of the College of Auto Musicology is Ken Babyface Rogers. Our engineer and assistant producer is Jennifer Jiffy Loeb. Our technical advisor is the 40-year and 3-week-old John Bugsy Sebastian, Mr. Height, Sweet Cheeks, Free Lunch Lawler. Did I miss any?
No, you're fine.
Okay. I think I may have. Should I go over the list again? Our public opinion pollster is Paul Murky of Murky Research. Our automotive medical researcher is Dr. Denton Fender. Our communications director is George Stantopoulos. Our secretary of pain relief is Les Aspirin. Our director of long-range strategic planning is Kay Sarah, who's married, of course, to Frank Sarah. And now her driver's license says...
Kay Sarah,
our staff geneticist is Dr. Gene
Whatever
Ford.
Will be,
our transportation
will be.
Coordinator is Rick Shaw, who's
the
working hard on the wheelbarrow race. The manager of the Tappet Brothers
music.
Capital Kay Depreciation Sarah, Fund Sarah. Is Les Ismore. The chairman of our math department
when
is Horatio Algebra. Mr.
Boy.
Gigi does our hair.
Yes, yes.
And last and probably least, our chief legal counsel from the law firm of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe is Hugh Lewis Dewey, known to the
will
other...
Will I be handsome or will I be rich? Here's what she said to me. Shut up!
Hugh Lewis Dewey is known to the other bums in Ivan Square as Huey Louie Dewey. We're Click and Clack, the Tappet Brothers. Don't drive like my brother.
Don't drive like my brother.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye. Car Talk is a production of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe and WBUR in Boston.
And it may not sound like it right now, but this is NPR, National Public Radio.